The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Happy Friday, St. Louis. It's April the 28th, 2023.
A
great day to you, John Hancock.
It is a marvelous day, and it's delightful to be here with you and all of you wonderful listeners out there.
So yesterday, I woke up first thing in the morning. It was a beautiful day. It got colder. Got colder and cloudier as the day went on. But in the morning, it was great. The sun was out. I hopped up, put on my sneakers, John.
You've been walking. You're losing all this weight.
About 3 to 6 miles a day. I get out there and stomp it around. There in the Central West End and
Forest Park.
It's just beautiful.
Park, yes.
So yesterday, I hopped up, put my sneakers on.
He's walking down that little path. Are you on the little path?
I'm walking on the path, and all of a sudden, I feel something hit my head. I thought, maybe it's one of those little Capella-looking things that comes out of helicopters.
The little golden things out of the tree there.
Right, and so I gently brush my hair.
Put a little seed on it, and it looks
Feel like a little wetness.
Got a little something going on.
Yeah, a little wetness. I thought, well, that's wet, and then I looked down at my shirt.
There it was.
A bird decided to use me as their landing spot for their excrement.
The bird has pooped on Michael
all
Kelly's
over
head.
Me. Now, two questions for you. Yeah. Number one, isn't that how COVID started?
No, that was a bat. It was a bat
that pooped.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I should have, you know, being
Did
being
you identify the offending bird?
I was going to say, being in touch with the rural Missouri the way you are, I should have given you a call and said, hey, John, based on this excrement, what kind of bird do you think this was?
I'm thinking it may have been the bluebird of happiness, soaring high above there and dropping a little happiness on Michael Kelly.
So I sent you the picture, and I thought, you know, and I sent it to a couple others, because I mean, what do you do? I mean, it's just kind of a funny little story.
It's a freak of nature, you might say.
Everybody.
How is a bird able to poop while it's flying?
Hello.
Well, let's think about this for a minute.
You can't poop and run at the same time.
You can't do it.
No.
I mean,
you could, but it's not.
Not something anybody wants to be around. But you think about the engineering that God put into the bird.
Right.
So that the bird can be in full flight, little arms flapping up
there it is. Yeah.
And it's just descending from the heavens. That could have been from 2,000 feet in the air, that poop dropping on you like that.
Robin Ron, you're clear for a flyby.
To hit you on the head is absolutely remarkable.
And then on my beautiful little shirt that I was wearing.
Shirt
so
got bird
I sent this
it.
Out to a couple of my friends, including you, because how many people told me that having a bird poop on you is good luck?
What?
If I heard it once, I heard it 10 times yesterday.
I've never heard that.
Having a bird poop on you is good luck.
You ever hear that, James? You have. James has heard it.
Perhaps the most famous of bird superstitions, if you're unfortunate enough to get pooped on by a bird, hello, that's me, it's actually a sign of good luck. Having originated in Russia, it's
go.
A thought to be good luck as chances of this happening are actually surprisingly low. So people were telling me, go buy a lottery ticket, go to the casino, go ask Charlize Theron out for a date, you know, something's going to go well for
it's
you.
It's a sign of luck.
I did everything yesterday.
Nothing.
I did not go to the casino, but I don't gamble.
Yeah, right.
But I did buy a lottery ticket, and to my knowledge, I didn't win.
Well, my car, then, must be the luckiest car. I got every bird that's ever passed through St. Louis or pretended to has pooped on my car.
Is that right?
It's unbelievable.
You know, and if you don't get that poop off of there quickly, it will, like, ruin the paint on a car.
Well, because it's poop.
Yeah.
And I got, so right out of my back door in the kitchen there, I got these little lights on the side of the house there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the birds have built a nest over one of them.
Oh, boy.
And not just built.
Which means they're having babies. There are going to be more of them.
They're up there.
Yeah.
This is like the third or fourth year in a row. I don't know if it's the same family of birds. If it is, these two can't control themselves. but they've had these birds up there in the same nest. I'm thinking of charging rent. So every time I come out the back door, which I step out a few times a
day. Right.
The mother bird gets very angry, and she flies away.
Yeah.
and I'm just worried she's going to poop on me.
And so she's got all this poop on the ground below in the nest.
There's poop, you and there's birds, and little orange beaks. It's cute. I will say that. Little orange beaks peeking up over the side of the thing.
But you would think that if you had the ability to fly and poop at the same time, you wouldn't want to poop where your house is. You'd fly away from your house and then go poop and then fly back to the house.
I mean, you know, maybe we can hook them up a little toilet up there where they're next to the nest.
That's excellent thinking. Yeah. Do you know what kind of birds it is above your...
I think they're robins.
Robins.
And they got, you know, the bird feeder. I mean, everything that you could want.
Yeah.
And rent free.
You got to be careful because you get some of those animals that will try to get in there and get at those babies. You can get raccoons and, you know, foxes and all that other stuff.
Well, for 4 years, it's been a very successful breeding ground.
Well, you're hosting a sanctuary, are you, there in Chesterfield?
I got a little bird stuff going on. You got a little bird stuff. We're going to talk more birds next hour.
Oh, I got some thoughts on
unbelievable
birds.
Unbelievable all the stuff we're going to do, but we're going to talk a little politics when we come back. Biden-Harris is out the gate, and we'll see how that goes. The House GOP has passed a debt ceiling bill. There's so much going on. Donald Trump's got court cases all over the country.
KMOX, the 2023 Large Market Radio Station of the Year, recognized by the Missouri Broadcasters Association. KMOX, we were built for this.
Hey there. Hancock and Kelly. Before we get serious, I got an itch on the inside of my ear.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And how do you? It's impossible to itch them. When I was in school, I had a brother who taught me, Brother Richard Geimer.
Yeah.
And he used to take a pencil and shove that pencil halfway into his ear to itch his ear.
No.
I just don't know how to itch an ear other than to push on it and apply pressure.
You could do irreparable harm to your tympanum.
The fact that you even know what that word is.
Well, buddy, I study these things.
Uh-huh.
So let me tell you what I know the answer, because this does happen, the old ear itch.
Yeah, on the inside.
On the inside of the ear. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So what you don't want to do is go sticking your bare finger in there, because who knows where that's been. You got birds pooping on you.
Exactly.
So what you want to do is you want to grab a tissue, otherwise a.k.a. Kleenex.
Yeah.
And you want to wrap that dog around your index finger, or perhaps if you've got fat fingers.
Yeah.
Your pinky finger.
Okay.
And you want to stick that dog right in the ear.
All right.
And then in a counterclockwise circular manner.
Counterclockwise.
You want to rotate that tissue, and that will alleviate the itch.
Well, there it is.
Without infecting the ear or damaging the tympanum.
You're an audiologist these days.
Well, I don't like to talk, Michael, but
did you get your merit badge in audiology?
I might have. And, you know, I like to consider myself well-read.
Yeah.
And, exposed to a lot of different concepts and ideas.
Did you read this? The President of the United States announced on Tuesday that he'll be running for re-elect.
Yeah.
He put out a Twitter video, a social media video, announcing that he'd be running for re-elect, also saying that Kamala Harris would be running with him.
Yeah.
Polling hasn't been great for Joe Biden.
It's been worse for Kamala Harris.
And it's been worse for Kamala Harris, but if they stack up against Donald Trump, boy, they're on easy street, it appears like, is what polling shows
now. Their campaign will be like dinner hour at Del Mar Gardens. What Biden's got to do in a year is somehow rehabilitate Kamala Harris's, her sentiment among the electorate, because this is not good. Where he is now is going to be an 82-year-old candidate. Yeah, we've never had one of those before. And the vice president, I think for both of these guys, for Biden and if it's Trump, for Trump, I think the vice presidential selection is going to be very impactful for a change in the, because that usually really doesn't matter much.
Right.
But in this race, you're going to have a 78-year-old Trump and an 82-year-old Biden, potentially, and Harris needs to get her reputation rehabilitated. Otherwise, she's going to be a drag on that ticket.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Trump could pick Carly Lake, which Tucker Carlson. There's so many of these folks he's expecting to pick a fringe candidate. I don't know that some moderate, I don't see a Nikki Haley saying, if it doesn't go well for her, okay, I'll sign up with you, Donald, because it's about to get dirty.
Yeah, and I've been saying for a long time, and I believe it, that Donald Trump can't win a national election.
Ditto.
And when you start to look down the road at the slowing economy and if you look at the revenue projections just in the state of Missouri, for example, we were on a revenue high for the last 2 years. Every quarter upon quarter was better and bringing in more revenue.
Infused by money of the federal government.
Right. No question about it. And if you have a recession, even a moderate recession that besets the country right around Election Day, It's possible Joe Biden could,
well, I mean, James Carville said it best, is the economy stupid? And that will be what Joe Biden will have to keep his eyes on. The Fed seemed to work quite judiciously in raising rates and stifled inflation a bit. It continues to go up. It's in far more regular parameters. But no doubt about it, the economy will be a strong issue, although the Republicans want to make it about cultural issues, and they're not on the right side of where American people are, whether it be on guns, abortion, and even the LGBT community.
Yeah, I actually think most Americans are where Republicans are on the transgender issue. I agree with you on guns. As it relates to those handful of reforms that Debbie talked about from the Fox poll, where it was plus 80% agree with universal background checks, waiting periods, I forget what the other restrictions were, but I do think in those areas, although, you know, whether that's going to be a preeminent voting issue for folks if the economy's in the toilet remains to be seen. And you're right on abortion.
Yeah, but they've made the cultural issues what they are going to run their campaign on. It's on everything from libraries to schools to guns to abortion to gender identity. I just don't see that to being a winning recipe. I'll tell you what else isn't a winning recipe: when your former vice president has to show up before the special counsel and testify. And that's exactly what happened yesterday with Mike Pence. We pretty much knew most of what he would testify to.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's being put on record shows that the special prosecutor, the walls seem to be closing in on the former president.
Maybe. But, you know, I think between the Trump presidency, which was so out of the norm for a U.S. presidency, whether you liked it or didn't like it, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've kind of lost some of the awe and wonder of a vice president of the United States appearing before a grand jury and testifying about the president for whom he served.
Right.
And that has never happened in the history of the country. And and we just kind of say, oh, yeah, Pence had to testify. You know, Trump tried to stop that testimony through the courts with an executive privilege claim. The Circuit Court of Appeals rejected that, and hence Pence had to testify for 7 hours yesterday. Historically unprecedented.
Well, it is unprecedented, but so is the fact that a former president is accused of rape and on charges for that, that he's been indicted on 30-something counts in New York State. He appears to be about to be indicted in Atlanta on tampering with the election. He caused an insurrection on January the 6th. I mean, there's so much about Donald Trump that's unbelievable. It's amazing to me that he still has any support inside the Republican Party, particularly after losing two elections, John. Two election cycles can be squarely on the shoulders of Donald Trump.
Well, in fact, his lead in the polling has grown in the last 2 months since all of these legal woes have come to pass. And I think there's a sentiment by a lot of people out there that Trump is being persecuted and they're rallying behind him. And, I still think he's not the strongest candidate. I almost think any Republican would be able to defeat Joe Biden, with the possible exception of Donald Trump. That's kind of where I come out on it.
There you have. One of the Republicans who would like to defeat Donald Trump is Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. He's on an international tour right now, says he's on trade missions, but he seems to be spending a lot of time with donors around the world. This is in the midst of his fight with Disney. Disney, one of the world's largest corporations and the largest employer in the state of Florida, is going back at Ron DeSantis now, suing him, saying that he is passing legislation for political retribution. Doesn't seem to me that you pick a fight with one of the world's largest corporations and, by the way, the largest employer in your home state when you're trying to make a case that you're a business-friendly man that should be the next president.
Well, that's not the case he's trying to make. The case he's trying to make is that he's a fighter and he's not going to give up. And he's going to pursue this woke culture in corporate America. And we'll see if that appeals to voters. It doesn't appear on the front end that it does, because he has slipped considerably in the polls. I don't know that that's Disney related necessarily. But here's what's interesting about this thing to me. A couple of things. The Republican Party has been a conservative party, which means you want to disencumber your private businesses from government. You want to have as little government involvement in the private business in the market as possible. And you put that on the one side, and that's sort of the old Republican Party. That's the party that I grew up in. Now we've got a very aggressive application of government to pursue policy objectives, in this case cultural policy objectives, which is antithetical to economic conservatism, but it's right in line with populism. And here's the real interesting thing. DeSantis believes that's where the Republican electorate is for him to go after the woke culture at Disney. He's probably right about that. But the people who fund Republican campaigns come out of the corporate business community. These are the folks that invest in the candidates. There is a disconnect. It's been there for a long time. But there is a growing disconnect between the people who fund Republican candidates and the people who vote for Republican candidates. That is not a sustainable political posture.
Well, neither is just having mainly white males vote for you. And as the cultural and the racial demographics of the country continue to change, it's going to get harder
and
harder.
Look, we took the House in a bad cycle. It should have been a great cycle, but it was a bad cycle. But we still took the House. We've won the White House within the last 5 years, 6 years. So, you know, I think it would be inaccurate to pronounce the Republican Party dead and gone.
Well, I don't think I'm doing
but
that.
No.
I'm suggesting long term they've challenged. Got some really systemic problems.
They are. But the other thing that's interesting about this to me, the DeSantis thing, is you see Nikki Haley going after DeSantis and all of these other candidates
Kevin McCarthy went after him.
Right. And I think a strategy is beginning to emerge in the GOP. DeSantis looked like he was going to be the alternative to Trump. And he's had some stumbles. And all of these other candidates, and you got Nikki Haley, you got Vivek Ramaswamy, you've got potentially Asa Hutchinson, and all of these people who really are less interested in taking on Trump right now than they are kind of fighting their way up the food chain to get to be the alternative to Trump. Because I think they think the path to winning is to dispatch all of these other choices and become Trump or me. And that's what's going on right now as this primary thing sorts its way out. I still think Trump's going to be very hard to defeat in a Republican primary.
From the macro to the macro being the federal government, let's go to the local government here in the city of St. Louis. The mayor of the city, Tashara Jones, gave her State of the City speech. Mark the tape, John. It was a pretty good speech.
What?
I watched the mayor's speech and a lot of what she had to say. Right on with where some of the policy objectives of the city need to go.
Like what?
Investing in infrastructure.
All right.
Making it a more business-friendly climate.
How are they going
to
do that?
Continuing to bring opportunity and jobs and affordable housing to the city of St. Louis.
What'd she say about crime?
Also weighed in heavily on a bunch of folks from rural Missouri wanting to take over her police department.
Mm-hmm.
She also doubled down on her crime plan, which is kind of status quo, and that is to spend a lot of money on services and deal with the root causes of crime. That would be where I have some objections with what the mayor had to say and the fact that she's sitting on all this money and it's not being spent. Outside of all that, it was a really good speech, and I thought she did a really nice job taking on Jefferson City and saying, here's the Bigfoot of state government wanting to come in and take her police department. This is anti to what Republicans typically think.
Yeah, but there's a crime pandemic happening in St. Louis, and it's not being addressed. They're not adding police officers. They're not prosecuting the people the police officers bring into the court system. They've got a whole slew of police officers they won't even hear testimony from out of Kim Gardner's office. And here's the mayor and the new police chief, who seems to me like a puppet at this stage. I hate to say it, but that's what he seems like to me, a puppet to the mayor who hired him. And so the state coming in and taking control of the police board is a good thing. We're out of time. I can't believe it.
We're going to talk about Kim Gardner when we come back.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
It is Hancock and Kelly. We'll take you all the way to 10 o'clock. Then we'll be joined by the show. Amy and Chris will be in. I thought I heard yesterday that Chris may not be here, but
it's hard to say.
Amy will be here for sure after her whirlwind trip to New York.
Yeah.
She was back yesterday. John, and what's back in the news is Kim Gardner. Yesterday, she faced yet another potential contempt of the court.
This is the number two, is that right?
The second time, yeah. She was in front of Judge Michael Noble, mm-hmm. and the judge, after the hearing yesterday on her failure to show up to yet another prosecution, had this to say about Kim Gardner, the circuit attorney.
The question before the court is whether Ms. Gardner and Ms. Desolate's failure to appear on April 10th and April 24th amount to disdain and disrespect for the court. The circuit attorney's office appears to be a rudderless ship of chaos. Ms. Gardner is the circuit attorney, and it is her duty to manage the caseload of each staff member. Mr. Deslitz has approximately 104 felony cases. Any prudent practitioner would expect such a caseload to create countless irreconcilable conflicts. It does not appear she has made any reasonable efforts to prevent the resulting chaos. It appears that Ms. Gardner has complete indifference and a conscious disregard for the judicial process. There is sufficient evidence of disdain and disrespect for the judicial process to determine that both Ms. Gardner and Mr. Deslitz's conduct support a finding of indirect criminal contempt. Furthermore, an attorney's violation of a court's order constitutes an intentional disobedience and shows a clear intent to disregard the power and authority of the judicial system process. If a court allows such disobedience to continue, then its orders will become ineffective, thereby undermining the judicial system. The court finds that there is the requisite conduct and intent which could support a finding of intentional disregard for the judicial process. The court will allow reasonable time for the preparation of defense. Accordingly, the court sets the matter for a hearing on Tuesday, May 30th, 2023 at 9:30 a.m.
That's Judge Michael Noble pulling no punches there, John, saying that the circuit attorney needs to put together her defense and why she shouldn't be held in contempt. Well, this circuit attorney has been spending a lot of time defending her own self. We know she's not out prosecuting, so guess she'll have plenty of time to put together a defense.
Well, and equally troubling here is that the assistant attorney general, this Chris Desilets, couldn't answer the questions. And they're not showing up to criminal cases, murder cases, to prosecute these cases. And so the defendant has no way to have access to a trial, which is in violation of that defendant's constitutional right to a fair and speedy trial. So the contempt charge here, there's a lot of remedies for if she's found guilty of contempt, one of which is she could go to jail. I don't see that happening. But I would think that her law license could be put in jeopardy if she is found to be in contempt of a court. And so if you lose your law license, you can no longer be the circuit attorney. That's a requirement of that job. So this is yet potentially another avenue to remove her from office.
Yeah, and Kim Gardner is continuing to hold on to this is a conspiracy to take her out along racial lines.
Well, they had
lines.
Protesters in the streets the other day with pictures of Martin Luther King and Kim Gardner on them. That's not what this is.
And rural Missourians trying to take over the process here in the city of St. Louis. You'll remember that the mayor and the president of Board of Aldermen took the bold step of saying that the circuit attorney should be doing some soul searching. They've continued to watch this spiral as Kim Gardner continues to lose lawyers, continues to find herself in this problem. She continues to enjoy the support of Cori Bush as well.
And continues to draw a large six-figure salary and doing nothing.
When do these three other folks say, hey, wait a minute, this is hurting the arguments of true racism and gender discrimination and in the midst of Jefferson City trying to take over everything that's going on in the city of St. Louis? Kim Gardner, you're not a help. You're a hindrance. And more importantly, you are a problem for the citizens of St. Louis.
If I were Tishara Jones, and I'm not, I would be on the phone with the governor, and I would say, all right, I'm willing to go to her and urge her to resign. She needs to go. I think it's clear that she needs to go. That's not even a debate any longer. She needs to go.
Right.
So the mayor, if the mayor were exercising leadership, would go to the governor and say, look, I'll go to Kim Gardner. We will effect her resignation from the office. Let's talk about who the replacement is and have a conversation and reach upon a compromised person that can fill that job for the next year and a half or however long it is before the next election. I think the governor would be able to work, potentially able to work something out with the mayor on that. And then they go to Kim Gardner and they need to go in force. The mayor, Megan Green, the president of the Board of Aldermen, all these progressives need to go to her and say, the gig is up. You're going to either get thrown out by the attorney general or you're going to get thrown out by the judges for contempt. But regardless, you're going to get thrown out. You need to resign, maintain your dignity, find her a job. I don't care. She needs to get out of that office and then get somebody in there that can rebuild. Because they got to rebuild this thing from scratch.
I'm not sure she cares about her dignity. I mean, she doesn't care about these victims of crime. I mean, it's just sad what's happening. I don't know how much longer we can sit and allow this to go on. It is killing the city of St. Louis.
Well, it's literally killing people.
And it's killing people. It's also giving fuel to the fire for the Republicans as they're trying to Bigfoot local government, something that they didn't used to want to do.
Well, I don't think anybody wants to do this, but there's no alternative. This is untenable.
Yeah. It just seems to me that she doesn't have the faculties to make this decision on her own, and those who have rallied behind her and told her she's done, so she needs to do some soul searching, ought to tell her what the soul said. And tell her it's time to move on. This is bad for St. Louis. It's bad for the state of Missouri, and it's bad for the entire region. Crime, 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 John Hancock. But we're going to move on. We've continued to talk about immigration at our southern border, and there's some policy changes that are about to be implemented.
Yeah, under the COVID-era restrictions, and this was one area that I applauded President Trump. I thought the way he addressed the border situation, irregardless of the wall, I thought the way the policy that was applied to the border under the Trump administration was a prudent one, and they used a regulation because of COVID, because of that health concern, where they turned away, I think it was 2.7 million people that were coming to this country during COVID. Well, that rule is about to expire in May. And, of course, we've seen this increasing crunch on the border, people coming not just from Mexico but from all over Central and South America to maintain, and they're all claiming exile. And the Biden administration has made a move that they're going to try and set up some of these migrant centers across Southern America there, where the migrants that are coming would stay in those centers in those countries while they seek asylum. The object is to keep them from swarming the border, which is unsafe for them and untenable for the United States of America. We're going to be joined by CBS News reporter Wendy Gillette. She's been covering this situation at the border. I don't think it's gotten enough attention as much as it should anyway. And she's with us next. It's Hancock and Kelly on a Friday on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference, on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
And welcome back to Hancock and Kelly. John Hancock alongside Michael Kelly. Joining us now on the guest line is CBS News reporter Wendy Gillette. She's been following the crisis at the southern border of the United States in just a few days, May the 11th. Title 42 is set to expire. Wendy Gillette, welcome to KMOX. Tell us about Title 42.
Yeah, Michael and John, there was a briefing at the State Department yesterday laying out these new immigration protocols designed to ebb the steady flow of migrants who are arriving at the southern border. There will be immigration processing centers throughout Latin America to screen migrants, starting in Colombia and Guatemala, with more countries probably added later. The regional hubs will make decisions about migrants if they qualify for refugee resettlement in the U.S., family visas, or work visas. They could also be resettled in Canada or Spain, which have both agreed to accept some of them. The processing centers could handle around 5,000 to 6,000 migrants a month. U.S. immigration employees will conduct the screenings. Now, this is in place of Title 42, which, as you mentioned, will end on May 11th. Title 42 allowed the government to expel more than 2 million migrants without processing their asylum claims. There are estimates that the ending of Title 42, along with the COVID public health emergency on May 11th, will mean a possible spike of migrants, maybe as many as 13,000 a day at the southern border.
Yeah, and we've seen in the lead up to Title 42's ending, we've already seen an uptick in the amount of activity at the border. And of course, this policy that Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas are going to spearhead is designed to kind of reduce that. Is there a sentiment that it's going to work, or do we still think we're going to have the crush at the southern border, even with these regional centers?
Well, as you mentioned, there has already been a sharp increase in illegal migrant crossings before the removal of Title 42. The Border Patrol reports about a 40% higher rate of migrant apprehensions compared to last month. And in May, it's expected that, as I had already said, that 13,000 a day possibility of that many migrants at the southern border, and these processing centers will only be able to handle 5,000 to 6,000 migrants a month. So at least in the short term, it does not look like it's going to stem the tide of migrants who are arriving at the southern border.
Since March 2020, when Title 42 went into place, 2.7 million people have been expelled as a result of this process. That's unsustainable, not only for the United States, but for the countries that they're traveling through. Have we seen any cooperation from these Latin American countries or Mexico going to work with the federal government to help us address this problem, as this has also got to be a problem for them?
Yes, there has been some cooperation and agreement that there will be more done in these countries to try to help people there instead of waiting until they get to the southern border. But all of these policies that have been laid out, they're probably going to face legal hurdles. A senior U.S. official says the administration is fully cognizant that many of the measures are vulnerable to litigation and that the only lasting solution can come from Congress. There is a border security package in Congress that will be introduced next month, so we'll have to see how that goes. This is a Republican-led effort.
Young people, children who show up at these migrant centers, will they be treated differently than adults who are making these pilgrimages?
Well, there have been rumblings that perhaps the administration will bring back the family detention plan that was so unpopular under the Trump administration. But yesterday, both of the officials said that that is not happening at this point.
And one of the things of all the issues that we're dealing with, you've got all these cartels that are, you know, people are dying trying to get to this country. And some of it's been driven by drug cartels. There are illegal drugs that are crossing the border, some of them through this process. How significant are those factors in what the government's deciding to do right now?
Right. Definitely the Biden administration says it's important to try to figure out which migrants are facing an actual situation in which they could face death or some kind of punishment if they return to their home countries. And that's why this weeding out is going to happen. This will be done by immigration officials in person. And for the first time, they're going to allow calls to the migrants who are being housed in settlement centers in at the border. So that's the first time that they're allowing that. So it'll be a mix of in-person and calls to try to figure out exactly what the motives are of these people.
We are visiting with Wendy Gillette, CBS News reporter, about the potential migration centers that will be set up in South America and other parts of Latin America. Wendy, you've mentioned that there's going to be a piece of legislation that's going to go up this coming month in Washington, D.C. Are we seeing any type of bipartisan cooperation, or is this going to be the typical Democrat-Republican stalemate?
Not sure about that at this point. This is very early days in terms of them introducing the possible legislation. A couple of Republicans spoke about it yesterday. The Biden administration will enforce a new rule that will bar some migrants from applying for asylum if they cross the U.S. border illegally or fail to apply for safe harbor in another country. There's also going to be an expansion of Title 8, which will mean anyone who's removed from the U.S. and then tries to illegally cross the border will face a 5-year ban on legal admission to the U.S. and possible criminal prosecution. And the family visa program is going to be expanded from Haiti and Cuba to Colombia, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. But there's already some efforts by Republican-led states to counter some of this. They have asked a judge to reject the sponsorship program. So that's one part of this new rule system of rules that's being rolled out.
Such a persistent and complex policy problem that is facing the United States. Wendy Gillette, last question before we let you go. You mentioned that Canada and Spain have agreed to potentially take in some of these asylum seekers. Is that a new negotiation, or has that been in place prior?
No, this is new. This is brand new that this is happening.
So that it potentially can ease some of the burden that's being faced there.
Yeah, possibly. But again, when we're talking about the numbers that we're, 10 to 13,000 a day, and then only 5 to 6,000, it's those 5 to 6,000 that might be going to Canada and Spain. That's a month, 5 to 6,000 a month.
Yeah.
So you compare that to 10 to 13,000 a day, and it's really, not really a drop in the bucket.
It's an issue that has plagued this country for many years and probably will continue to do so, and we'll keep an eye on it. Wendy Gillette, thanks so much for your time. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks so much.
You know, what's frustrating is when you hear the size of these numbers.
Yeah.
You and I both know what's going to happen. This is going to turn into the typical same old theater of Republicans saying none of it, Democrats saying, well, we got to be more compassionate, and we're not going to pass any legislation here. I hope some common sense prevails, because 2.7 million people that have been coming since COVID, that's unsustainable.
Yeah, it is. And, at some point, these issues are going to have to be addressed in the home countries. The people are fleeing those countries for a reason.
Right.
And, and we can't solve every problem everywhere, but that's really what's driving this train. And, we can't sustain it. It's just that simple.
Well, who knows? Maybe they got some transgenders down there. We'd get active if that was the case. I'm sorry, brother. I can't help it. It's just so silly that we're wasting this much time. Hey, we're going to talk about one of my very favorite subjects and
something that
I got to spend a little time with yesterday, birds.
All right. That's next
after
on
KMOX.
What defines us is who we are as a collective group and how we progress and gain momentum through the season.
The Coach's Corner with St. Louis City Coach Bradley Carnell. Mondays at 9:35 on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, welcome back to Hancock and Kelly. John Hancock, Michael Kelly over there. And for many years, my buddy lived downtown on Washington Avenue on third floor condominium. Lovely place.
Fifth
floor.
Yeah.
Huh. You were up
there. You were there so much you don't remember.
I remember. I get my odd numbers confused sometimes.
Yeah.
But he would, at night, gaze out his window there.
The whole reason I bought the place.
He would overlook the Gateway Arch, one of the great symbols of this city. And at nighttime.
The symbol of this city.
Well, that's an excellent point. At nighttime, they would light the arch. Myriads of colors, thousands of lights glistening off of this great metal monstrosity sticking up 660 feet high above the earth. And he would think to himself, what a magnificent sight that is.
True that.
And during baseball season, fans flocking to Busch Stadium, and the arch would be lit up at night, and it was something you could see from your seat there at Busch Stadium 3. And then, at some point every year, the lights go off on the Gateway Arch, and we've learned just today that the National Park Service will not illuminate the Gateway Arch at night throughout the month of May 2023 due to the spring bird migration season. The National Park Service began turning off the Gateway Arch's exterior lights to protect migrating birds in 2002. The arch's exterior lights will be turned back on beginning the evening of Thursday, June the 1st, 2023, and the monument will be lit nightly thereafter. And you, Michael Kelly, have a problem with this.
Well, here's my problem. Originally, when they started to light the arch, they only lit it for a couple of hours. They wouldn't start until 10 o'clock at night.
Cost money to light that.
Right. And now it seems to be lit more often. Look, we don't have a lot going for us here in St. Louis these days. What we do have is probably the most recognizable piece of artwork in this country. And that's the Gateway Arch. I mean, I guess you could say potentially the Statue of Liberty is an artwork.
Well, you got the little Space Needle over there in Seattle.
But, it's so recognizable. It totally is emblematic of what St. Louis is. And it was frustrating to me. You go to the ball games and they weren't lighting up the arch. Now they seem to be lighting it up, and then they turn them off at a certain period of time. Here's my question. I love birds. Birds are great. Sometimes birds leave me a little something on top of my head
they
or on my
on
shirt.
You yesterday. They this is an anti-bird thing you're
yeah,
doing.
But my problem is do they turn the lights off on the Metropolitan Square building or the Southwestern Bell building?
I don't know.
Do they turn them off on all the other things? I have a hard time believing that the arch is affecting bird migration patterns.
Well,
that arch has been there since the 1960s.
That's where you don't know.
If birds are really thrown off by the arch, they've been flying by it their entire lives. And I just don't understand why we turn the lights off. I don't get it. I don't see them turning the lights off on the Golden Gate Bridge. Don't see them turning the lights off on the Statue of Liberty.
Different deal.
Are we turning the lights off on the Gateway Arch? And if we're going to turn them off, there's even closer to the river is the Lumiere Casino that's all lit up. Shouldn't that be turned off and made dark so that the lights won't show up?
Well, let me.
I think it's a preposterous argument.
Let me.
That this is throwing the birds off, and I think it's. This is some type of. Listen, I'm making a woke culture argument. I think this is something that we're doing to make ourselves feel better about the environment that truly doesn't make an impact.
Well, let me see if I can explain this to you, Michael.
Have at it.
The Statue of Liberty is on where?
It's there in the harbor.
And on the?
Hudson.
On the coast.
Yeah.
Birds aren't migrating over the coast.
What do you mean birds aren't migrating?
The Golden Gate Bridge
is where?
Where's the Golden Gate Bridge, Michael?
On the coast.
It's on the coast.
And you're telling me that birds don't go from Mexico to Canada? Your argument's false.
Where is the Gateway Arch, Michael?
Right in the middle of the country.
In the middle of the country. There you have it, folks. Now, here's the situation, and here's why you're, once again, incorrect. And why
we can't believe you're becoming the environmentalist.
Well, the little birds out there, they got to get from A to B.
Uh-huh.
You know, and here they're migrating in May. And we know this because that's what they do. They migrate in May.
Right.
And they're tweeting up there. And the Lumiere is high, but it's not 660 feet high in the air. No. The arch is 660. Where do birds fly, Michael? They fly in the sky. They're up there in the sky. And here's this big lit up metal thing. And the birds, you know, they've got the eyes in the sides of their heads. I don't know if you've noticed.
Well, they probably are missing them. Where's that thing that we flew by on the way down?
And they've got the eyes in the sides of their heads, and the light draws them in as they're soaring. They're 660 feet above the air. And then, plunk, plunk, plunk. They're dropping like.
I would like to see the pictures of all these birds that are apparently
like
showing
flies,
up by the
birds.
Arch that we're making these decisions for.
Plunk.
I don't buy it.
You know what it sounds like when a bird hits
I see birds flying into buildings in downtown St. Louis all
happens,
the time.
Not in those kinds of numbers, because this is the migration season. Thousands of birds. Tippy hedron.
You just like to get under my skin.
Thousands
is really
of
what
birds
this comes
out
down
there
to.
Plunking themselves against the steel. And you know how hard it is to get the bird stuff off of the steel arch up there? 600? I mean, that's not easily done.
Mm-hmm.
No. But then, what does that do to the quality of the lighting when it comes back on? You got bird carcasses all over.
There's no bird carcasses.
They're plunking into the arch. Yeah. It's the humanity of it. And so, in the interest of saving avian life, we are going to, for one short month, we're going to turn the lights off so these birds aren't drawn into the death trap that has become the arch, the gateway to the Midwest, the gateway to the West, or all of it. And they won't be plunking their little beaks and damaging their little bird bodies and falling to the ground, writhing in pain.
I'm just
from 660 feet high.
After listening to you do that exclamation, it's even sillier that we're turning the lights off on the arch. Okay, I will let it go. We're going to turn the lights off on the arch. We might as well turn the lights off on everything. There are many people downtown anyway at nighttime, so no reason to
there
put a harbinger out there that we exist.
There is an alternative explanation, however.
What is that?
Well, I'm sure it's not inexpensive to turn those lights on that arch.
Yeah.
I mean, you got, I don't know.
Oh, you think this is a cost savings?
Hundreds of not thousands.
They don't turn it off on the Statue of Liberty.
Hundreds of not thousands of lights that are on that thing.
Yeah.
And so for a 31-day period...
Mm-hmm.
Which would be approximately 1/12 of the year.
Yeah.
They have found.
Oh, I think they do it in the fall, too.
Oh, they do.
I think they
now
do.
Now you're talking about 1/6 of the year.
Because we got to get them coming
well,
and going.
Well, the birds are coming back.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
Yeah.
So perhaps an alternative explanation of this.
Let's just take it down and move it to Clayton.
Is that by utilizing the migratory patterns of the birds, we are actually saving the taxpayers. Thousands, if not millions of dollars by 1/6 of the year turning the lights off and having an environmental excuse to do so. Perhaps that explains the policy of turning off the lights. Maybe it's less about the birds.
So you're making the argument that Joe Biden's saving money for our country. There you go, John Hancock.
It may be less about the birds and more about the bucks. And that really is a conundrum we're
in. Serious.
Here.
You think this is silly too, right?
Well, not if we're killing birds out there.
Oh, come on,
John. I mean, I don't want to
I don't
want to
kill birds either, but I don't know that the arch being lit up at nighttime is killing any more birds.
I just explained it to you.
I understand your explanation.
It's 660 feet high in the air.
Yeah, which, by the way, I think the Bell Building is like 550.
Well,
so help me out. Help me understand how those extra feet are suddenly going to be problems because it's lit up.
I think it's a silly, ridiculous argument. I can explain this.
Okay.
You got a building up there.
What are you, like Alex Trebek? You know everything?
Pretty much.
Uh-huh.
So you got a building out there. What do we know about buildings, Michael?
Well, they're tall.
And they're
big. They don't move.
And they're big.
They're lit up.
And they're big.
They don't move.
And if I'm a bird. And I see this big, massive concrete structure, whatever the heck is
you
up
You just
there.
Described the arch as big, massive concrete steel structure.
Different. Listen to me now. I'm trying to elucidate here for you. You got a building. The bird sees, that's a building. I want to fly above that sucker.
Uh-huh.
The arch, on the other hand, is not a building. It's a structure. It's a thin, narrow little, what do you call that thing, James? It's got a name for it. The little, the half, arch. It's got a name for it. It's a parabola or something like that. I don't know what it is. And much easier for a bird to kind of miss the fact that that little light in the sky is actually a structure because it's not a big building. It's just a light in the sky. Oh, there's a light in the sky, the bird thinks to himself as he flies perilously to his death, crashing into the arch. That is what happens, and that's why the arch is a unique structure, perhaps in saving the birds.
All right, Mr. Attenborough. I've been spending the morning here with David Attenborough, Mr. Nature guy, explaining to me bird migration patterns and why the arch being lit up for 31 days is going to ruin the transportation for birds.
I know a lot about a lot of things, Michael, but I'll tell you something I'm not particularly skilled at doing.
What's that?
Self-diagnosing medical conditions. Let me suggest that none of us are very good at that. That's next on KMOX.
Local news and information direct to your smart speaker. Just say, play KMOX.
And welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. We're going to stick around at the top of the hour, spend some time with Amy. I just saw on Twitter that Charlie Brennan will be in for an hour with Amy today.
Unbelievable.
At noon today. So you're going to want to stick around to the show with Amy Marks, of course, as Chris Ranji is taking some well-deserved time off.
He's migrated.
The guy's been solo for a while here. He's had other people rotating in. Amy's been out gallivanting the world, seeing people in New York, going and skiing.
She's busy.
She's living the baller
life. She's busy.
Hey, so about a month ago, I diagnosed myself with allergies. Yeah. I don't think it was allergies anymore.
Oh.
I was taking the Zyrtec and all this other stuff.
I remember that.
Yeah, I was looking at the WebMD, and I was like, oh, I've got allergies. Maybe I had COVID, for that matter. Who knows I had. I doubt it.
Well, here's the thing.
But WebMD, the self-diagnosis doesn't work, does it?
It's not a good idea.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea. And, I bet many of you have fallen into this trap. You've got some symptoms. So you get out there with the old internet, which we didn't used to have.
Right.
Now we've got it.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a little doctrine on yourself. You say, okay, I got this over here, and this is going on over there, and it must be, therefore, I got, boom. So 4 months ago, minding my own business, my face swelled up. Not a little bit. A lot. I looked like the Elephant Man.
Right.
And very concerned. My son-in-law, who's a pharmacist, was over, and he said, you probably ought to have that looked at. So I went to the emergency room. I figured I'd had some dental work done. I got kind of a mess in my mouth. I figured it's got to be a tooth infection.
Sure.
Has caused this swelling. And so I go to the emergency room. They take an X-ray. Sure enough, I've got a tooth infection. All right. And they give me some antibiotics and steroids.
Uh-huh.
And, couple of days later, swelling's gone down. I'm feeling fine.
Right.
No problem. A few weeks later, on a Saturday night, right before our television show at 8:30 Sunday morning on Fox 2.
That's right.
My tongue starts to swell up. My tongue is all torn.
I loved it.
And fortunately, so I had an emergency standby sub, but by Sunday morning, my tongue was back to normal. And I was able to talk.
Yeah.
And then, I had a thing on my arm that kind of got swelled and itchy, and then I had a thing on my leg, and all of this is in a several-month period. My tongue would occasionally swell up and blah, blah, blah. So Tuesday, I have dinner, lovely dinner, casserole Georgianne made. It was great. Right. And I ate the casserole, and my face starts, and you could feel it, boom, boom, boom.
Getting bigger,
boom,
and, bigger
getting
and bigger
and bigger. And
you feel your heartbeat in your face?
It was,
like
it was unbelievable. Yeah. And it's just, I start, and by the time this is over, I look like a Simpsons character.
Totally.
And I got, my lips are all, like, I've had the lip injections, like, 130 times in both lips. And it's, like, massive. And it was terrible. I was supposed to fill in for Reardon on Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
So I figured that's not going to work. So I get online Tuesday night, and I start putting all these little symptoms in. And I figured out what I had.
What's that?
Heart failure.
Oh, there you go.
And so I'm laying there in bed. I'm
you didn't call 911?
I'm on my knees praying. Well, I figured I'd make it through the night.
Oh, and, John. Oh, Lord.
So Wednesday I go to the emergency room, and I go up there, and I show them my face, and the lady at the intake, she said, oh, my gosh. And come right in, she says.
More of a reaction than normal, huh?
Yeah. So the doctor comes in, Dr. Ahmed. And and I tell him, I said, I think I got heart failure. And so he says, you know, I was a little concerned. I showed you the picture.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah. I promised not to share it.
It's not a pretty picture.
No.
So anyway, long story short, they take a bunch of blood tests.
When you self-diagnose yourself, did he chuckle, the doctor?
He might have. Yeah, I was not in a laughing mood
at the
moment. Thinking that the only good news that was going to come out of this is my life insurance policy was still viable. So they took the blood test. There's a test for heart failure, and if you're under 100, that's good.
Yeah.
I was at 20.
Oh, there you go.
So very good. So it turns out I've got a condition called angioedema.
Ah.
You can look it up, folks. It's not a pretty thing.
Face something or another.
And there's three possible mechanisms that bring this into your life. Uh-huh. One is hereditary.
Okay. Nobody in the family's had it?
I can't think of anybody. I mean, maybe great-great-grandpa Hancock's face blew up all the time, but I didn't know him.
Right.
One is an allergic reaction to
something. Have you ever been allergic to anything?
Not to my knowledge.
Right.
Maybe I am now.
Uh-huh.
And then they've got a third category, which I don't know what the heck's causing this thing.
Uh-huh.
And that was my diagnosis from the emergency room.
But so the doctor says, I don't know what's causing this.
We know what it is.
Take two pills and call me
in the
morning.
It won't kill you unless, of course, you can't breathe. And so that's kind of, you got to keep an eye on that. But anyway.
Are you satisfied with that answer? Because, John,
I've
seen the photo.
Well, I've got a doctor's appointment.
Okay, yeah. So there's going to be follow-up here.
Oh, yeah. We're going to figure out something is causing this.
Uh-huh.
And we'll get to the bottom of it. But all of that is to say, Michael, when we go and diagnose ourselves,
uh-huh,
we're going to cause alarm and shock. And let me caution all of you that the physicians who have gone through 6 years of medical school are in a better position to know what you're dealing
with. Take 10 deep breaths. Did you sleep at all Tuesday night when
Not
you thought
much.
You had I was going to say, I don't even know that I would be able to fall asleep.
I spent a lot of time on my knees.
Did you consider going to the hospital that evening?
No. I mean, I told Georgianne, I said, I'm not too worried about it. I was worried as heck, you know.
Right.
But,
buddy, you should have gone to the hospital.
Well, it's
might I suggest if this happens in the future, you can go in and say, I don't know what is causing it, but this is what I
have. Well, I'm going to get to the bottom of it.
They give you like a magic shot or something?
Yeah, they gave me a shot of something, and then I'm taking all these steroids. I am hopped up this morning, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, I can see the muscles bulging out your shirt right now.
Well, that's you just wait, and then, of course, we're going to be on the snooker table later.
Yes, we are.
Today.
Hey.
And it's going to be good.
Did you see what happened last night?
What?
The NFL draft.
Oh, yeah, I saw a little bit of it.
It happened in Kansas City. And I guess
my nephew's girlfriend is a Kansas City Chief cheerleader.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Which one? The one in the tight outfit?
Well, they're all in the tight outfit.
Oh, okay. You'll have to point her out to me the next time we see the Chiefs.
All right, I will.
But I was watching it last night, and they said there were 125,000 people outside of Union Station in Kansas City.
Did it not look beautiful?
Yes, it did. But wait, let me ask you this. If, say, we still had an NFL team.
Yeah.
You know, thanks, Dan Kroenke. And they were doing this under the arch. Would you have gone down and been a part of 125,000 people to watch a bunch of college kids?
If we had just won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And we were hosting the draft party, this town would go absolutely nuts, I guarantee you.
Okay.
But I'll tell you,
I don't know that I would have gone.
I remember the campaign in Kansas City where they passed the tax to redo the Union Station.
Union Station, sure.
Because that thing was in disrepair. And they ran a very expensive case. Not a popular, it was a tax increase.
Sure.
But it passed, and that facility, wow.
Oh, yeah.
It was magnificent.
Listen, Kansas City is killing it. If you haven't been to Kansas City lately, it's a great little trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be our little brother that we made fun of.
Right.
Now, all the studies are, whoa, what is Kansas City
doing? Now we can't even say they're bad at baseball because we're not doing so hot ourselves over here.
Man, last night wasn't bad. Yesterday wasn't bad, but... something's got to change.
Well, what are we, six games under 500, James? Six or seven? Yeah, I think we're six now under 500.
Yeah.
And so if you win two out of three games, it's a month before you're 500 again. And that's if you're playing really good baseball. That means the end of May, we might be at 500. That's a long way to go.
Have you submitted your name to be a pitcher for the Cardinals? We need some.
No, but...
you're taking steroids, it may be helpful.
I could get my face blown up and probably distract somebody out there.
Well, we thank you for joining us.
Do.
We're going to stick around today for the show with Amy Marks, of course. We also will come back with the Dave Glover Show later this afternoon around 3 o'clock if they are here. Don't forget, you can see us Sunday mornings at 8:30 on Fox 2.
Fat face permitting. We'll be there on Fox 2.
Hopefully Michael Kelly will be there.
James O'Sullivan doing his customary excellent job behind the board. Amy Marks scores, and the show is up next on KMOX.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.